Next, we have Mark Moran, Child Death and Serious Injury Review Panel.
Good afternoon, Senator Ingwersen, Representative Meyer, members of the Health and Human Services Committee. My name is Mark Moran. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the chair of Maine's Child Death and Serious Injury Review Panel. And to Senator Moore's immediate question, you don't have handouts from me as you normally do. I've had some travel adventures in the last 48 to 72 hours that have impaired my ability to be as prepared for this as I was hoping and as I normally am. So my remarks might be a little shorter today, but I'm happy to answer whatever questions you might have. And I'll avoid acronyms for Senator Moore's benefit as well. That's right. So for the benefit of the new committee members, whom I've not yet had an opportunity to meet, I've been a member of the panel since 2008 and the chair since 2014. I started my career as an intern with the Child Protective Services program in Bangor and then worked as a Child Protective Services caseworker for nearly 5 years. After leaving OCFS, I began working as a medical social worker in the Women's and Children's Services Division at Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center, where I've been employed since 2006. I've also worked with the Maine Court-Appointed Special Advocate Program as either a volunteer guardian ad litem or a member of the CASA Advisory Panel since 2008. And I've been part of a small group of community professionals who volunteer to develop and host the Maine Child Welfare Education Annual Conference in the Greater Bangor area since 2006. This is the ninth time I've appeared before the committee for the purpose of providing an update on the work of the panel. For the benefit of the new members and as a reminder for returning members, the Child Death and Serious Injury Review Panel is one of three citizen review panels in Maine. Citizen review panels are required under CAPTA, the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, which is the primary child welfare legislation at the federal level. You'll hear from the other panel representatives here in just a little bit. Our panel meets generally in 10 out of 12 months. We take July and August off. It's typically a difficult thing to have a quorum present during the summer months because the summer in Maine is so short. Plus, we have periodic joint review meetings with the Domestic Abuse Homicide Review Panel as well. The cases that we review are often 6 to 24 months post-critical incident. Our authorizing statute requires us not to interfere with the prosecution of homicides, and that has been interpreted over the years to extend to any pending criminal charges. So we're not allowed to examine a case in depth or in any level of detail until a criminal prosecution has been adjudicated. And as you probably know, that can sometimes take many months, if not a couple or a few years. We conduct three different levels of review, level one, two, and three, we call them, very simply named. Level one reviews are summary reviews, a short paragraph about every report of a child death or serious injury that the intake unit receives at OCFS. From those, we look for themes, we look for commonalities, things that we might want to dig into deeper, either as a content area or individual cases. Level two reviews are thematic reviews. So if we identify a cluster of cases where there's a certain common factor, we might look at two to three or sometimes four of those common cases as a group in one of our meetings. And then finally, our level three reviews are cases where we dig as deep as we can. We have presentations typically from the OCFS staff who were involved in the case, as well as law enforcement in many of those circumstances. We have access to a number of different record sources. We have subpoena power through the panel. And so we can almost always get what we need or want in order to review a case to our satisfaction. We do not focus solely on OCFS's role, decisions, and actions. We recognize the child welfare system is far more broad than OCFS alone. We focus on system improvement, not on blame or fault finding. And much of the value of the panel's work exists in its behind-the-scenes sort of ability to influence practice. The panel's multidisciplinary membership is often able to influence policy and or practice changes in real time rather than waiting for periodic formal public reports, either like this or in our annual report, as I'll reference at the end, waiting for those reports or recommendations. In terms of the last several months, since September, the panel has met five times. Meetings have included administrative updates from OCFS regarding structural changes and policy reviews and changes, presentations from various community providers to bolster panel members' knowledge about topics that we have encountered, and level one reviews of all child death and serious injury reports received by the intake unit from May of 2024 through November of 2024. We conducted two level two reviews, the first cluster involving cases in which there were challenges with the multidisciplinary evaluation of children with fractures. Challenges included recommendations for follow-up imaging studies that were not conducted for a variety of potential reasons, including access to those services, language barriers, and general awareness of the need for those sorts of things. The difference between clinical and forensic opinions, I've addressed that topic before with the committee. And verbal and written communication and timing of communication between the Spurwink Center for Safe and Healthy Families and the Office of Child and Family Services. The second cluster involved cases in which an adolescent either attempted or completed suicide. Challenges included different responses from OCFS to cases with similar circumstances. In two of the cases were very similar in circumstance, and one was screened in for investigation, the other was not. Awareness and comfort level of various types of providers asking about suicidality and access to lethal means. The lethal means topic is one that we encounter periodically in the panel. This includes things like having access to loaded and unlocked or otherwise accessible firearms in the home. The research on suicidal behavior suggests that the time from a decision to commit a suicidal act to acting on that decision in 25% of the cases is about 5 minutes. And in 75% of the cases, the time is within an hour from decision to action. So any time that can be present between the decision and the action is protective, can be protective. So more time between the decision and action is better than less time, and any time is better than no time. We also conducted two level three reviews in that time period since September. Challenges included lack of clarity around caseworker training and education when completing visual inspections of infants, and the ongoing difficulty ensuring that child abuse pediatric subspecialty consultation happens on all reports of serious injuries. There continues to be concern about the potential for frontline medical providers potentially biasing the OCFS staff via their opinion of a particular injury, either in saying that it's a concerning injury or that it's a not concerning injury, and how that then influences OCFS staff to seek or not seek child abuse pediatrics input. And I'm happy to say more about what child abuse pediatrics is at some point if the members would be interested in that. We've also had discussion about the nature of the communication between OCFS and medical providers and primary care providers, and the potential for OCFS staff to partner with primary care providers in a manner similar to how they either have or will be holding joint training sessions with law enforcement. You've perhaps heard me reference in the past cops and caseworkers training, again, a joint opportunity for law enforcement officials and child protective services officials to get together and learn about how each other does their work, the things that are important to each group, and the benefits that can have for each of their respective disciplines. The panel talked about opportunities to involve prevention-focused services earlier to address known risk factors prior to and perhaps eliminating the need for subsequent CPS intervention. You heard Ms. Alberi reference this notion earlier. Such earlier intervention might include the consistent availability of social worker services in both pediatric primary care and obstetrics offices. And when I talk about primary care, just for clarity, I'm also referencing family medicine providers. We have a great number of them around the state who care for kids. We tend not to finalize our recommendations until the end of a reporting period. These are most often complex cases that we're looking at, and recommendations don't always become immediately apparent or agreed upon until additional information is gathered or additional cases are reviewed. Some potential recommendations might include enhanced training for OCFS staff on completing visual exams of infants, having designated OCFS liaisons in primary care offices, not OCFS staff to be clear, but staff of the practice who can be a primary contact point for the OCFS staff. Enhancing information sharing between OCFS and primary care providers, and enhancing the relationship between prenatal care providers in the obstetric setting and public health nursing staff. The leadership of the citizen review panels continues to meet quarterly to discuss general themes the different groups are encountering and to ensure that we are collectively surrounding the work of the CRPs, citizen review panels, as completely as possible. We did just publish our annual report, and I'd just like to summarize or go over those recommendations briefly. You all received an email from me on January 1st that contained that report. If you didn't see it or you want to go back and look at it, a little light bedtime reading perhaps, you can just search my name on January 1st in your inbox and you will find it. We had 12 recommendations that resulted from the last approximately 18 months worth of our work. We changed our reporting period this most recent window, so it includes all of calendar year 2023 and the first 6 months of 2024, and we'll be reporting on our state fiscal year calendar moving forward. So first, the Office of Child and Family Services and the Spurwink Center for Safe and Healthy Families should partner to develop an education plan for primary care providers and emergency department clinicians to be trained on the importance, identification, reporting, and evaluation of sentinel injuries in premobile children. And I'm happy to highlight or define any of these terms as we go, if that's helpful. OCFS and the Spurwink Center should partner to develop a document or poster that can be displayed in medical settings to provide ongoing evidence-based guidance on the evaluation of sentinel injuries and the evaluation of children who are members of a household in which a child has been seriously injured or killed, and there's concern for child maltreatment as a cause of that injury or fatality. OCFS and the Spurwink Center for Safe and Healthy Families should continue to partner regularly to examine barriers to effective case-specific collaboration and consultation. DHHS, in collaboration with appropriate state and federal funding sources and Maine's hospital and healthcare systems, must ensure that child abuse pediatric services in Maine are sufficiently funded to allow for urgent consultations, timely in-person evaluations, and timely communication of evaluation results for all children throughout the state. OCFS and law enforcement entities should include their respective assistant attorneys general, both civil and criminal, and or county-based prosecutors when crafting legal documents whose content may serve to adversely impact the other party's ongoing investigative or prosecutorial work. OCFS and law enforcement entities should continue their efforts to collaborate on joint training sessions. OCFS and the Office of the Attorney General should collaborate to develop a form letter that can be sent from the OAG or OCFS to both mandated reporters and their organizational leadership or legal counsel when the mandated reporter has failed to meet their statutory reporting requirement. OCFS should develop a work group, including medical providers and education staff, to examine opportunities for improvement in policy and practice related to sharing of OCFS data with other key professionals specified in statute, with a goal of optimizing the ability of those professionals to participate more meaningfully in the protection of Maine's children. OCFS and Maine CDC should continue to partner on consistent public health messaging on topics such as safe sleep for infants, use of protective headgear for children on or in recreational vehicles such as snowmobiles and ATVs, and child falls from improperly secured windows. The legislature should propose and pass a bill requiring children to wear helmets when riding or operating motorized recreational vehicles, regardless of whether the recreational vehicle is being operated on public or private property. The Maine CDC should develop a work group, including representation from the Division of Public Health Nursing and the Maternal Child Health Program, to examine barriers to universal referral of all birthing families to Maine's Maternal Child Health Home Visiting Program, Cradle Me. And finally, OCFS should convene a multidisciplinary stakeholder group and or continue and enhance existing efforts to develop a statewide service pathway for families at risk of OCFS involvement who do not yet meet the necessary criteria for OCFS investigation or intervention. The goal of such a pathway should be to provide supportive, non-punitive services in whatever form is necessary to mitigate identified risk factors for child maltreatment. I'll add one more sort of ad hoc comment. I appreciated Representative Javner's comment about the importance of hearing the positives in this work. We always focus so much on the negative stuff that happens. It's what gets headlines. It's what news folks tend to grab onto. In one of the suicidality cases that we looked at most recently, we observed a particular caseworker, and I presume his supervisory hierarchy, his or her supervisory hierarchy, who went above and beyond in the aftermath of a youth suicide to help a family in a way that was not truly, I don't think, a child protective services task. And I can't say more about it because the details of that would identify the case, I think. And I certainly can't do that. So it's important for us to keep those sorts of positive things in mind and to elevate those in our discussions to the extent possible. The constant, near constant at times, focus on the negative components of the work, the areas where caseworkers fall short, actually makes their work harder. By a lot, and in meaningful ways. So, we've heard from caseworkers who tell us that it's harder to get community service providers that they're trying to help, to trying to engage to help a family. It's harder to get those community entities to work with the department staff because of the perceptions that they have based on media reports, based on all the rhetoric that gets tossed around. And ultimately, that impacts families and children in a negative way. We want our staff, our child welfare staff statewide, to be able to do this work effectively. And when we continually employ terms and continually use rhetoric that paints them in a negative light, it makes their work harder and it makes children unsafe, ultimately. So I'll stop there and say thank you for the opportunity to join you today, for your interest. Again, my apologies for not having my standard packet prepared, but I'm happy to try to answer whatever questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Moran.